This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast, Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on motoring law. I am here today with Barrister Jeremy Rosenberg from 23 Essex Street Chambers in London. Jeremy is regularly instructed in serious and complex legal matters, and he has particular experience in motoring issues and regularly receives instructions relating to all aspects of driving offences. Jeremy was recently commended by a judge as being both persuasive in law while finding a way to connect to the jury, which was involving and sensitive. Thank you very much for joining us, Jeremy.
Pleasure. Hi, Hattie. How are you?
I'm not bad. I'm not too bad, Jeremy. Right, motoring law. I think I mentioned to you earlier, and I'll say it again for our listeners. I don't think we have ever received so many questions on legal aspects of law as we have on motoring law. We have been inundated with questions by our listeners, which is brilliant. So let's just fire off because we've got lots to get through. And one of the most commonly asked questions that we've been asked to discuss today is, can I still drive if I have more than 12 penalty points on my driving licence? Now, I have to admit that it wasn't until I actually learned what the answer was to this question. All my adult life, I automatically assumed that the answer was no. So you can enlighten us a little bit more then. Let's go for it.
Sure. Well, normally when you commit a driving offence, if it's a small offence, you receive penalty points. So for having a tyre that is bold, you'd get 3 penalty points. And
speeding,
exactly, driving with a mobile phone. And once you reach 12 penalty points, you are then what's called a totter, which means you've reached the maximum amount of points you're allowed to have at any one time. And once you go over that, you should then be disqualified for 6 months. So that's what's known as totting in the criminal courts. However, there is a situation where you can drive with more than 12 penalty points on your record. And that's when you're being dealt with by the court. You can argue what's called exceptional hardship. And that is where you can show to the court that for whatever reason, that if you lost the use of your vehicle, it would cause you such difficulty that it would cause you exceptional hardship. Now, normally that's someone that, for example, uses their car to drive so that they can earn a living, like a taxi driver, or if you're
Uber driver.
Exactly, or a builder that had to carry all his tools in the back of his van and he couldn't do his job without it. And you're able to show that if he lost his car or his van even for 6 months, that would mean he'd lose his livelihood and it would cause much more damage to his life than simply not being able to drive. Let's say if you worked in an office and you could get the train or the tube to work it, and using your car was more of a luxury that you were able to do on the weekends and whatnot.
So it's not the be-all and end-all if losing your driving licence and not being able to drive would mean that your livelihood could stop immediately as a result. But then it is down to this discretion of the court, isn't it? You don't automatically think, oh, I'm a builder and I've got, or I'm a plumber or whatever, and I've got to carry all my tools in my van, or I'm a taxi driver or an Uber driver, and therefore I will definitely get told that it will be okay. It's not automatic. It's down to the discretion of the judge.
That's right.
But there is a possibility the judge may give you some leeway, even if you hit 12 points or over.
That's right. But as I said, so the word that you have to pay particular attention to is the exceptional hardship. So there are lots of previous cases that have been decided that say that if you're showing some hardship, that's not enough. And the Court of Appeal and the High Court have looked at some of the magistrates' cases and said that no, it has to be exceptional. And it has to, you have to be able to show that it would cause damage way beyond.
And there is no other way for you to continue your job. For example, if you're an Uber driver, you know, you can't then say, well, I'll catch a taxi to do my job because that's your job. So, no. Yes.
And even an inconvenience, like I've got children to pick up from school.
Yes, which I'm sure could be a common excuse or a common reason, should I say.
Yes, and the courts in those circumstances would often say, tough, you know, part of the punishment is to be inconvenient, but they don't want to put people out of work. Or yes. If you were looking after a disabled individual and let's say you had a converted vehicle that was for the use of the disabled person and you suddenly couldn't use that vehicle, then they might find that that was exceptional.
Yes.
The other thing that people should remember is once you've used that reason, you can't use that reason again for 3 years. So if you're someone that does collect points regularly, it's not like you keep turning up at court and saying, but I'll lose my job.
Yes. No, indeed. I mean, I think that's very important because if you've got to 12 points, you know, it's a serious thing and there must have been more than one or two errors. I mean, I have to admit, as a driver of over 20 years, I got 3 points for going, I think it was 3 or 4 miles over the limit. And I thought, well, that's not fair. It's only 3 or 4 miles over the limit, but over the limit is over the limit. You know, there has to be a line drawn somewhere, doesn't there? I mean, I think the last I heard about mobile phone usage is it's automatic 6 points, and that could actually quickly happen if you're packed with by a few cameras doing 2 or 3 miles over the limit, and the borough has not been so merciful towards you to let you off. You can easily get to 12 points. Actually, I think in this current climate, not that I'm saying that, you know, going the exact speed is the right thing to do. Well, that's very helpful.
I was just going to say, certainly with the use of mobile phones and the ever-increasing use of average speed cameras and AMPR cameras and all those kinds of things, we live in a world where there might not be as many police on the street, but there's certainly lots of things watching you.
Yes. No, indeed. Okay, very informative. The second question that we have is, are the police allowed to stop my vehicle for no reason? Now, that question kind of made me smile because I thought, well, when you say no reason, how do you know it's not for no reason unless you've spoken to the police to see why they stopped you? So, yes, if you fail to stop, police can turn up and just stop you when you might think, well, I'm not doing anything wrong here.
Yeah, so if you're in your car, there is a rule under Section 163 of the Road Traffic Act 1988 that gives the police a power to just stop your vehicle, full stop. So you don't need to say to them, well, what was the reason you stopped me? They're allowed to stop you and they're allowed to ask for your license, your insurance and your MOT certificate. And obviously, if you don't have them, then you should be given 7 days to produce them at your local police station.
And it is an offence to fail to stop, isn't it, Jeremy?
It is an offence to fail to stop because, of course, when you're in your car and all you see is a police vehicle, you can't have the opportunity to communicate and for you to say, well, why are you stopping me? So they've obviously made it an offence if you just don't stop when the police require you.
Yes. Okay, well, that's crystal clear, I think.
Once they've stopped you and they suddenly might want to start looking around your vehicle or in your vehicle more to the point, then that falls within stop and search powers and they would need reasonable suspicion or permission from a high-ranking officer in certain circumstances to have access to inside your vehicle.
Right. And that's another interesting point, because I don't think many of us, you know, automatically know these things about stop and search. I tend to hear conflicting news about that. I think the latest I heard is that the police have now have powers because of, and this is going on to another subject, but because of all the increasing knife crime, the police have the powers to stop and search no matter what. But what we're saying here is that if a police is going to stop your vehicle, yes, they can do that. But if they want to search inside, they have to have a reasonable sort of reason for it, a suspicion for it, or a higher ranking officer giving permission that should proceed.
Yes, in most circumstances, there's always exceptions, but they're quite rare. But yeah, so for example, if it's to search for weapons, if the permission of a higher ranking officer of a certain rank has been given for their area, they are allowed to conduct searches for weapons. They don't need to have reasonable suspicion that you've got a weapon in your car.
Yes.
But let's say if they thought you had drugs and it was just a stop under the Drugs Act, they would need reasonable suspicion to believe that you had drugs in your vehicle.
Okay.
Of course, how they come to that reasonable suspicion is multifaceted. They can think of lots of reasons why you might have been acting suspiciously.
Right. Okay. Right. Another common question. Actually, this was more on the top of the list, but it's kind of piped its way down. I've been caught using my mobile phone whilst driving. How many points will I get? Now, we're talking about handling your mobile phone in any shape or form, because I think that does count as using your mobile phone. So if you're sitting in traffic and you thought, oh, there's lots of traffic, I can easily send a little text or even get on my phone to use my social media or music, Spotify, to play in the car. You know, if you handle your phone, if you're using it in any shape or form, and a police car ends up pulling up beside you or happens to see you, how many points will you get? What's the standard there?
Yeah, so the standard is 6 penalty points. And like many motoring offences, there is also a discretion to disqualify you if they think it's so serious that it requires that. But in those circumstances, you normally have to have been doing something very serious for the court to think that they should exercise their discretionary power to disqualify you from driving.
Right.
So normally 6 penalty points.
Or they could obviously give you more if they think, well, actually, this calls for more points. Okay. Next question, Jeremy. If I do not stop for an amber traffic light, is it an offence? And I have to say, again, this is one of those questions where there's a general sort of view. I don't know where my general view used to come from, but my general view was, oh, I don't need to stop for amber. It means get ready to stop. I only need to stop for a red traffic light. Is that so?
Yeah, so the legislation is if you contravene a traffic signal. And obviously, that normally means a red light means stop. And if you go through the red light, you've committed a criminal offence. In terms of amber light, it is, as you said, it's preparing to stop. And you can be prosecuted if you go through an amber light if someone is able to argue that you were driving carelessly. For example, that you hadn't made any attempt to stop and you saw the amber light from a very long way away. Someone could argue that you were just not even trying.
Not preparing. Yeah. No, I get it. Okay.
If you're close to it, and I think most of us know this rule, that if you're close and it would be dangerous to stop, so if you had to do an emergency stop to stop your vehicle with the amber light and potentially cause an accident from somebody behind you, then it's not a criminal offence if you were to drive through the amber light.
Okay, all right. That's quite clear. I can just hear the arguments about what was going to be deemed as close, too close to the lights, possibly, you know, because one person might say, well, I was too close, and then the police might say, well, no, you wasn't. One person might argue, well, I would have caused an accident if I stopped, and it might be argued by the police that, well, you should have been going slower, so you could have stopped.
Well, yeah, that's possible. My experience, yes, though, is that police will normally prosecute someone for going through a red light.
Yes.
And they will prosecute people for careless driving if you've obviously risked causing danger to other people.
Yes. Okay.
But normally, you'll probably get a ticking off. I've very rarely come across a case where there's a driver in the magistrate's court for driving through an amber light.
Okay. All right. Next question. Let's get on to that. What is the legal limit for alcohol for drivers?
So the legal limit for alcohol depends on what test is being conducted. So
That's interesting.
Well, there are three ways the police test for alcohol in your blood. The first and most obvious one, which we're all familiar with, I'm sure, is the breathalyzer. So they test for alcohol in your breath. And the legal limit for that is 35 micrograms per 100 milliliters of breath. Now, if you ask me to do it...
Convert that. I'm not going to because it sounds complicated, but I'm sure that's going to mean a certain measure in a glass at some point.
No, I can't do a Blue Peter. Here's one I prepared earlier.
Well, that's going back a few years now. Is Blue Peter still on?
For me, it is, yeah.
Right, okay.
You couldn't demonstrate that without... It requires specialist equipment, normally authorised for the police to use. And they'll have a handheld device at the roadside, which not every officer carries. So often they'll call for a police officer who's got it to come. If you fail the roadside breath test, you're then taken to a police station and you're put under a breath test procedure there with an authorised machine. They're normally quite big, sophisticated machines. And they test for levels of alcohol in your breath. So that's the first type. Then the second type, which is more commonly used, if for some reason you cannot provide a breath specimen, is alcohol in your blood. And that's a more straightforward calculation of milligrams in milliliters. So that's 80 milligrams of alcohol per 100 milliliters of blood. And the final is in your urine, which is the legal limit is 107 milligrams of alcohol.
Well, hold on, because I'm getting really confused here. The way I used to understand it is you're allowed one spirit or one glass of wine. When trying to convert and understand these in those terms, can we convert those to those terms? Because obviously these different milligrams in different measurements in urine and blood and breath, what does it actually translate to when we're talking about a glass of something?
I wish I could help people with that, but unfortunately, that is what we all do at our own risk, because the way that alcohol is measured in your body all depends on your height, your weight, and unfortunately...
Jeremy, that is so key, because I have to say, all my life, I believed... Oh, you're allowed one glass of wine, but one glass of wine for a very tall, well-built person, and it could be different for man or woman, will measure differently in their body to a smaller person who's perhaps more petite, having that person. So this is a very key point, because I think that, you know, this over the limit, this term, I will be over the limit if I have another glass, or I'm still under the limit so I can have another glass. That doesn't exist, is what we're saying. It depends on your body and how the alcohol disperses in your body to then be translated when you're tested by breath, by urine, or by blood.
Absolutely.
That is a big myth buster.
There's other factors.
That is a big myth buster. Jeremy, you've just enlightened, because I tell you, there will be lots of people, and I am not ashamed to say, including me, who didn't realise that.
And here's two extra tidbits that might help as well, is that eating food affects the alcohol and how it builds up in your body and how quickly it disperses in your body. So obviously, if you're drinking with a meal, it does tend to mean that alcohol doesn't build up as quickly in your body or disperses quicker. And here's the really interesting one, is those that drink more often, and so they're used to alcohol, tend to get rid of the alcohol in their body quicker than others.
Wow.
So if, and that's why you have, you know, the people who are known as working alcoholics, the ones that can live and drink.
Is that where that term derives from? People that can live and drink at the same time, the alcohol becomes dispersed, so therefore they're not technically over the limit because of the way their body's dealt more, with the alcohol.
I meant more as in you, there are functioning alcoholics. That's the phrase I was looking for.
Functioning. Well, I've had the well. That's a new term.
Someone that consumes large amounts of alcohol regularly, who where someone else who doesn't drink regularly might be on the floor after drinking, let's say, half a bottle of vodka. Someone who is a functioning alcoholic who drinks that kind of quantity daily would then be able to manage the alcohol in their system better than someone that hasn't drunk for months.
I think I have to say, during this podcast, the most informative part, in the sense of really busting a big myth, has been the fact that there is no such thing as a measure of glass of any alcohol that deems whether you're over or under the limit. And I think that is such a key point and something I've learned today. I have to say, we've got time. Sorry, Jeremy.
No, I was just going to say, that's why the guidance is, if you're going to drive, that you shouldn't drink anything, because no one can guarantee how the alcohol reacts in your body.
Yes,
especially if you're slim, short, you know, you're more susceptible to being over the limit.
You could be a large, weighty person, so to speak, but not drink often, and therefore that one drink may not disperse in your body as quickly as you think it needs to. You might be stopped after one glass of wine and be very surprised that you're over the limit. And if you're caught in any situation, what is the minimum ban for drink driving? So let's talk about it in the sense of first offence, first time you've ever been stopped drink driving. Obviously, I can appreciate, is the amount of alcohol going to have a bearing on how much your ban could possibly be or not?
It does definitely. So there is what we call sentencing guidelines in the criminal courts, which set out what you would receive in terms of punishment and disqualification, depending on specifically for drink driving. So if the legal limit is 35 in breath, if you were to blow 36 to 59 in breath, you would receive a disqualification of between 12 months to 16 months. And obviously it works whereby the closer you are to the legal limit, the more likely you would get a 12-month ban.
And that's the minimum. That's the minimum. Yeah. So the minimum, if you're really at the lighter end of the scale of where you are over the limit. And when we say over the limit, again, you know, that the normal person, and I certainly would have before today, would think of how many glasses, but we're talking about the measures used by the police to measure whether you're over the limit or not. Our society's interpretation, which is, oh, it's one glass or it's one shot of a spirit. So the minimum conviction is 12 months for drink driving, and I don't think, is it fair to say that there's no excuse, there is no out? If you've caught drink driving, there's going to be a ban. There's no, but I was, and I have no idea what somebody can say as an excuse, because I don't quite frankly think there could be an excuse.
Earlier on when I explained about exceptional hardship, that does not apply to drink driving offences. If you are convicted of drink driving, you will get a disqualification. No ifs, buts.
And then it's all down to how much over the legal limit being the measures by breath, by blood and by urine, if you're tested in whichever of those ways, were you over, that will determine your fine. And again, I think that's really, really interesting stuff, because somebody can say, well, you can't turn up and say, well, I had a glass of wine and I thought I was, that was it. I thought I was within the legal limit, because of the way people say, oh, you, how many glasses have you had? Oh, that's still within the legal limit. And it's not going to be an excuse to say, I only had a glass of wine and I thought I was within the legal limit. I don't think the court is going to accept that at all. Do you agree?
Yes. So it might be what we call good mitigation. If you've never been in trouble before, you've got witnesses that say, well, I only saw her drink one small glass of wine and you ended up blowing 36, 37, 38. In fairness, I should warn that the police are advised not to prosecute people under 39. But that is, again...
That's interesting.
So between 36 and 39, they are advised not to prosecute people. Almost a sort of margin of appreciation. But it doesn't stop them. There's nothing in law that says they cannot prosecute.
Yes, because the law says anything over a certain amount, you are to be prosecuted.
Yeah.
In measure. Okay.
And then just as a word of warning to people, as an example, if you were to blow 120 over the legal limit, so that's about, that would be four times over the legal limit, you would get a starting disqualification of 29 months, up to 36 months. And more importantly in this category, is you would risk going to prison.
Wow.
Because for the lower breath samples, you would normally receive a fine. But if you're suddenly huge amounts over, you can be sent to prison.
Criminal record. Do you get a criminal record if you've had a very slight over limit and you've had your 12-month ban and a fine? Is it an automatic criminal record?
Yes. Every crime in the criminal courts technically goes on to your criminal record. I think there's a question coming up about when convictions are spent, which is...
There is, but we're running out of time. And this isn't fair because we haven't really, again, another podcast where I haven't been able to really delve in. But what we're saying is it is a criminal record to get convicted for drink driving of any level because it is a criminal offence.
Yeah, and specifically with road traffic offences. So if you're driving without using your mobile phone, as we've talked about, or if your tyre's not to the right tread, you would get technically a criminal record, but you'd never have to disclose that because of the type of offence that it is. But if drink driving offences are considered a proper criminal offence, and you would that would always be on your criminal record, and it would be there for people to see, the police, the courts, and so you are at risk if the courts deem drink driving an extremely serious offence.
Yes, no, indeed. Well, Jeremy, that is actually all we've got time for, so thank you very much for joining us today. I can see part two coming up quite quickly because we've got about four pages of questions here. So don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.
Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes.